You say, "Great idea. Let's go down to McSorley's and dance until we see dawn together like in the old days." 4. Reasonable part of wife's request. Your house does need some repairs. You say, "Okay, maybe you're right. What repairs do you think we need to do?" 5. Reasonable part of wife's request. For you to focus on what turns her on. You say, "This is hard for me to talk about, but I'll try to listen to you. Tell me how you want to be touched." 6. Reasonable part of wife's request. For you to clean up before dinner. You say, "Sorry, okay, I'll clean up." Then do it. 7. Reasonable part of wife's request. Buying the outside lights was necessary. You say, "You're absolutely right that we need them. It's fine that you bought the lights. Thank you for doing it. But next time, can we talk it over first like we usually do?" 8. Reasonable part of wife's request. Not to surprise her with a new car. You say, "We need to talk about this car. Tell me why you're upset." 9. Reasonable part of wife's request. To get a break from the kids. You say, "Okay, let's go for a ride, kids. Ice cream on the way for everybody." 10. Reasonable part of wife's request. To have sex more often. You say, "Great idea. Can you wear the satin nightie? I love making love to you." Now that you've worked through these examples, you should have a better sense of what it means to give in a relationship. The next step is to get used to giving to your spouse and sharing power more in your own marriage. The following fun exercise lets you work on making decisions together. As you do it, remember that the goal is for both of you to be influential and to accept each other's influence. Exercise 2, the Gottman Island Survival Game. Imagine that your cruise ship just sank in the Caribbean, and you awaken to find yourselves on a tropical desert island. Gilligan and Ginger are nowhere in sight. The two of you are the only survivors. One of you is injured. You have no idea where you are. You think there's some chance that people know of the ship's distress, but you're not sure. A storm appears to be on the way. You decide that you need to prepare to survive on this island for some time, and also to make sure you'll be spotted by a rescue party. There is a bunch of stuff from the ship on the beach that can help you, but you can only carry 10 items. Your mission. Step 1. Each of you writes down on a separate piece of paper what you consider the 10 most important items to keep from the inventory list ahead, based on your survival plan. Then rank order these items based on their importance to you. Give the most crucial item a 1, the next most crucial a 2, and so on. There are no right or wrong answers. Ship's inventory. 1. 2 changes of clothing. 2. AM/FM and shortwave radio receiver. 3. 10 gallons of water. 4. Pots and pans. 5. Matches. 6. Shovel. 7. Backpack. 8. Toilet paper. 9. 2 tents. 10. 2 sleeping bags. 11. Knife. 12. Small life raft with sail. 13. Sunblock lotion. 14. Cook stove and lantern. 15. Long rope. 16. 2 walkie-talkie sender receiver units. 17. Freeze-dried food for 7 days. 18. 1 change of clothing. 19. 1/5 of whiskey. 20. Flares. 21. Compass. 22. Regional aerial maps. 23. Gun with 6 bullets. 24. 50 packages of condoms. 25. First aid kit with penicillin. 26. Oxygen tanks. Step 2. Share your list with your partner. Together, come up with a consensus list of 10 items. That means talking it over and working as a team to solve the problem together. Both of you need to be influential in discussing the problem and in making the final decisions. When you've finished, it's time to evaluate how the game went. You should both answer the following questions. 1. How effective do you think you were at influencing your spouse? A. Not at all effective. B. Neither effective nor ineffective. C. Somewhat effective. D. Very effective. 2. How effective was your spouse at influencing you? A. Not at all effective. B. Neither effective nor ineffective. C. Somewhat effective. D. Very effective. 3. Did either of you try to dominate the other, or were you competitive with each other? A. A lot. B. Somewhat. C. A little. D. Not at all. 4. Did you sulk or withdraw? A. A lot. B. Somewhat. C. A little. D. Not at all. 5. Did your partner sulk or withdraw? A. A lot. B. Somewhat. C. A little. D. Not at all. 6. Did you have fun? A. Not at all. B. A little. C. Somewhat. D. A lot. 7. Did you work well as a team? A. Not at all. B. A little. C. Somewhat. D. A great deal. 8. How much irritability or anger did you feel? A. A lot. B. Some. C. A little. D. None. 9. How much irritability or anger did your partner feel? A. A lot. B. Some. C. A little. D. None. 10. Did you both feel included? A. Not at all. B. A little. C. A reasonable amount. D. A great deal. Scoring. Give yourself 1 point for each A answer, 2 points for each B answer, 3 points for each C answer, and 4 points for each D answer. Tally your score. If your final number is over 24, you're doing a good job of accepting each other's influence and working together as a team. If you scored 24 or below, your marriage needs further work in this area. If you're having difficulty accepting influence, one of the best things you can do for your marriage is to acknowledge the problem and talk with your spouse about it. Nobody can change old habits overnight. But if you're able to take responsibility for the parts of your marital troubles that are caused by your difficulty with sharing power, that in itself will be a major leap forward for your marriage. Your spouse is likely to feel a great sense of relief and renewed optimism about improving your marriage. The next step is to make your partner an ally in your crusade to overcome this problem. Ask her or him to gently point out to you instances where you are being unwittingly domineering, defensive, or disrespectful. Because all of the 7 principles are interrelated, the more you work on the others, the easier it will become for you to share power. And of course, the more skilled you become at accepting influence, the easier it will be for you to adhere to the other principles. A willingness to share power and to respect the other person's view is a prerequisite of compromising. For that reason, becoming more adept at accepting influence will help you cope far better with marital conflict, the focus of Principles 5 and 6. As you'll see, there are 2 major categories of disagreements that virtually all couples experience. When coping with either kind, accepting influence will be a cornerstone of success. 7. The 2 kinds of marital conflict. Every marriage is a union between 2 individuals who bring to it their own opinions, personality quirks, and values. So it's no wonder that even in very happy marriages, the husband and wife must cope with a profusion of marital issues. Some conflicts are just minor irritants, but others can seem overwhelmingly complex and intense. Too often, couples feel mired in conflict or have distanced themselves from each other as a protective device. Although you may feel your situation is unique, we have found that all marital conflicts, ranging from mundane annoyances to all-out wars, really fall into one of 2 categories. Either they can be resolved, or they are perpetual, which means they will be a part of your lives forever in some form or another. Once you are able to identify and define your various disagreements, you'll be able to customize your coping strategies depending on which of these 2 types of conflict you're having. Perpetual problems. Unfortunately, The majority of marital conflicts fall into this category. 69% to be exact. Time and again, when we do four-year follow-ups of couples, we find that they are still arguing about precisely the same issue. It's as if 4 minutes have passed rather than 4 years. They've donned new clothes, altered their hairstyles, and gained or lost a few pounds and wrinkles, but they're still having the same argument. Here are some typical perpetual problems that the happy couples in our studies are living with. 1. Meg wants to have a baby, but Donald says he's not ready yet and doesn't know if he ever will be. 2. Walter wants sex far more frequently than Dana. 3. Chris is lax about housework and rarely does his share of the chores until Susan nags him, which makes him angry. 4. Tony wants to raise their children as Catholics. Jessica is Jewish and wants their children to follow her faith. 5. Angie thinks Ron is too critical of their son. But Ron thinks he has the right approach. Their son has to be taught the proper way to do things. Despite their differences, these couples remain very satisfied with their marriages because they have hit upon a way to deal with their unbudgeable problem so it doesn't overwhelm them. They've learned to keep it in its place and to have a sense of humor about it. For example, one couple we studied, Melinda and Andy, have an ongoing conflict over his reluctance to go on outings with her family. But when they talk to me about this problem, they don't get angry. They simply relate good-naturedly what happens. Andy starts to tell me what he always ends up saying. Melinda, who knows it all so well, jumps in and offers up his quote for him, mimicking his put-upon voice, "All right, I'll go." Then Andy adds that he also says, "Okay, sure. Anything you say, dear." "We still continue to do that," Melinda explains to me. Then Andy chuckles and adds, "We don't even disagree good, do we?" Melinda and Andy haven't solved their problem, but they've learned to live with it and approach it with good humor. Despite what many therapists will tell you, you don't have to resolve your major marital conflicts for your marriage to thrive. Another happy couple, Carmen and Bill, have a perpetual problem over their disparate degrees of orderliness. Carmen has the discipline of a drill sergeant, while he is a classic absent-minded professor. For Carmen's sake, Bill tries to think about where he's putting things. For his sake, she tries not to nag him when things get lost. When she finds, say, last month's phone bill under a 2-foot pile of newspapers in their recycling bin, she'll make her point by gently teasing him, unless she's feeling excess stress that day, in which case she'll probably throw a fit, after which he'll make her a mug of hot chocolate as contrition, and they'll go on happily with their day. In other words, they are constantly working it out, for the most part good-naturedly. At times it gets better, other times it gets worse. But because they keep acknowledging the problem and talking about it, their love for each other isn't overwhelmed by their difference. These couples intuitively understand that problems are inevitably part of a relationship, much the way chronic physical ailments are inevitable as you get older. They are like a trick knee, a bad back, an irritable bowel, or tennis elbow. We may not love these problems, but we are able to cope with them, to avoid situations that worsen them, and to develop strategies and routines that help us deal with them. Psychologist Dan Weil said it best in his book, After the Honeymoon, "When choosing a long-term partner, you will inevitably be choosing a particular set of unsolvable problems that you'll be grappling with for the next 10, 20, or 50 years. Marriages are successful to the degree that the problems you choose are ones you can cope with." Weil writes, "Paul married Alice, and Alice gets loud at parties. And Paul, who is shy, hates that. But if Paul had married Susan, he and Susan would have gotten into a fight before they even got to the party. That's because Paul is always late, and Susan hates to be kept waiting. She would feel taken for granted, which she is very sensitive about. Paul would see her complaining about this as her attempt to dominate him, which he is very sensitive about. If Paul had married Gail, they wouldn't have even gone to the party because they would still be upset about an argument they had the day before about Paul's not helping with the housework. To Gail, when Paul does not help, she feels abandoned, which she is sensitive about. And to Paul, Gail's complaining is an attempt at domination, which he is sensitive about." And so it goes. In unstable marriages, Perpetual problems like these eventually kill the relationship. Instead of coping with the problem effectively, the couple gets gridlocked over it. They have the same conversation about it over and over again. They just spin their wheels, resolving nothing. Because they make no headway, they feel increasingly hurt, frustrated, and rejected by each other. The four horsemen become ever more present when they argue, while humor and affection become less so. They become all the more entrenched in their positions. Gradually, they feel physiologically overwhelmed. They start a slow process of trying to isolate or enclose this problem area. But actually, they have started becoming emotionally disengaged from each other. They are on the course toward parallel lives and inevitable loneliness. The death knell of any marriage. The signs of gridlock. If you're not sure whether you've gridlocked over a perpetual problem or are coping well with it, this list will help. The characteristics of a gridlocked problem are: the conflict makes you feel rejected by your partner. You keep talking about it, but make no headway. You become entrenched in your positions and are unwilling to budge. When you discuss the subject, you end up feeling more frustrated and hurt. Your conversations about the problem are devoid of humor, amusement, or affection. You become even more unbudgeable over time, which leads you to vilify each other during these conversations. This vilification makes you all the more rooted in your position and polarized, more extreme in your view, and all the less willing to compromise. Eventually, you disengage from each other emotionally. If this sounds painfully familiar, take comfort in knowing that there is a way out of gridlock, no matter how entrenched in it you are. As you'll see when we get to Principle 6, all you need is motivation and a willingness to explore the hidden issues that are really causing the gridlock. The key will be to uncover and share with each other the significant personal dreams you have for your life. I have found that unrequited dreams are at the core of every gridlocked conflict. In other words, the endless argument symbolizes some profound difference between you that needs to be addressed before you can put the problem in its place. Solvable problems. These problems may sound relatively simple compared with unsolvable ones, but they can cause a great deal of pain between husband and wife. Just because a problem is solvable doesn't mean it gets resolved. When a solvable problem causes excess tension, it's because the couple haven't learned effective techniques for conquering it. They aren't to blame. Far too many of the conflict resolution ideas recommended by marriage manuals and therapists are not easy to master or apply. Most of these strategies focus on validating your partner's perspective and learning to be a good listener. There's nothing wrong with this, except that it's very hard for most people to do at any time, much less when they're distressed. My fifth principle for making marriage work tackles solvable problems head-on. It offers an alternative approach to conflict resolution based on my research into what goes right when emotionally intelligent couples handle a disagreement. I will show you how to, 1, make sure your startup is soft rather than harsh, 2, learn the effective use of repair attempts, 3, monitor your physiology during tense discussions for warning signs of flooding, 4, learn how to compromise, and 5, become more tolerant of each other's imperfections. Follow this advice, and you're likely to find that solvable problems no longer interfere with your marital happiness. Telling the difference. If you and your spouse are entrenched in a conflict, it may not be obvious which of the two types of disagreement you're having, gridlocked or solvable. One way to identify solvable problems is that they seem less painful, gut-wrenching, or intense than perpetual gridlocked ones. That's because when you argue over a solvable problem, your focus is only on a particular dilemma or situation. There is no underlying conflict that's fueling your dispute. For example, both Rachel and Eleanor complain that their husbands drive too fast. Eleanor has been arguing with her husband Dan about this for years. He always tells her the same thing. She's overreacting. He's never had an accident, he reminds her. He says he is not an aggressive driver. He's an assertive one. She tells him she doesn't understand why he can't change his driving habits, so she'll feel less nervous in the car. She ends up yelling that he's selfish, that he doesn't care if he kills both of them, and so on. He tells her the real problem is that she doesn't trust him. Every time they have this squabble, they feel all the more frustrated and hurt, and ever more entrenched in their positions. There's a lot of vilifying on both sides. Dan accuses her of being distrustful. She accuses him of being uncaring. For Eleanor and Dan, speeding constitutes a perpetual problem they will probably never fully resolve. That's because their disagreement symbolizes deeper conflicts between them. They are really arguing about big issues like trust, security, selfishness. To keep their ongoing battles over driving from ruining their marriage, they'll need to understand the deeper meaning that this battle has for each of them. Only then will they be able to manage it effectively. But for Rachel and Jason, disagreements over driving speeds constitute a solvable problem. Every morning, they commute together from their suburban home to downtown Pittsburgh. She thinks he drives too fast. He says he has to speed because she takes so long to get ready. If he doesn't make up for her dawdling by speeding, they'll both be late to work. Rachel says it takes her so long in the morning because he showers first and takes forever. Plus, he always leaves the breakfast dishes on the table. While she's busy washing them, he's honking the horn for her to hurry. Every workday starts with accusations and counter-accusations about showering time and household chores. By the time Jason drops Rachel off at her office, he's stonewalling and she's fighting back tears. This couple's difficulty over driving is a solvable problem because, for starters, it is situational. It occurs only when they are going to work, and it doesn't reverberate into other areas of their lives. Unlike Eleanor and Dan, they don't vilify each other. Their arguments aren't about his selfishness or her being distrustful. They're simply about driving in their morning routine. By learning a more effective way to talk with each other about the issue, they could readily find a compromise. They could put blame aside and work out a schedule that got them to work on time without passing the speed limit. Maybe they could set their alarm 15 minutes earlier, or she could shower first, or he could just remember to deal with the dishes. However, if they don't work to find a compromise on this issue, it's likely that they will become increasingly resentful and entrenched in their positions. The conflict could deepen and take on more symbolic meaning. In other words, it could evolve into a gridlocked, perpetual problem. Next, I'll describe various scenarios of marital conflict. For each one, write down whether you think it's solvable or perpetual. 1. Cliff and Lynn agree that it's Cliff's job to take out the kitchen trash every evening after dinner. But lately, he's been so distracted by a big deadline looming at work that he forgets. Either Lynn ends up throwing out the garbage herself, or the trash just sits there. By morning, the apartment smells like a city dump, and Lynn is in a rage. Solvable or perpetual? 2. Elise wants to spend less time with Joel and more time with her friends. Joel says this makes him feel abandoned. Elise says that she needs time away from him. He seems very needy to her, and she's feeling suffocated by him. Solvable or perpetual? 3. Ingrid wishes that Gary would bring up things that are bothering him rather than sulking. But when he does try to tell her when he's upset by some things that she's done, she gets critical about how he has brought them up. She asks him not to mention so many at the same time. He says that since it's so hard for him to discuss such things, he wants a reward when he does. Namely, he wants Ingrid to say she's sorry instead of criticizing his style of communication. Solvable or perpetual? 4. Helena gets together with her friends every Monday night. Jonathan wants her to take a ballroom dancing class together with him, but the only night the class is held is Monday. Helena doesn't want to give up her girls' night out. Solvable or perpetual? 5. Penny complains that Roger expects her to do all the work taking care of their newborn son. Roger says he'd like to do more, but because he works during the day, he isn't as experienced as his wife at diapering, bathing, and the like. Whenever he does try to do something, like pick up the baby when he cries, Penny tells him he's doing it wrong. This makes him angry, and he ends up telling her to do it herself. Solvable or perpetual? 6. Jim works full-time, while Thea is a stay-at-home mom. He wants her to be more organized about running the house, to clean it more, and to do a better job of planning the mornings so the kids get to school on time. He acts smug and superior to her, and gives her the sense that the disorganization in their house is due to a character flaw she has. She feels attacked and gets defensive whenever he raises the subject. She says their house is supposed to be a home, not an army barracks, and that he needs to relax about these issues because his demands are unreasonable. They have been arguing about this for 4 years. Solvable or perpetual? 7. Whenever Brian and Elisa have a disagreement, he quickly raises his voice. Elisa feels intense stress when he yells and tells him to stop. Brian says he doesn't see anything wrong with yelling when he's upset. Elisa starts to cry and tells him she can't take it. So they find themselves fighting over his yelling rather than whatever issue they disagreed about. Solvable or perpetual? 8. Ever since their baby was born, Curtis felt that Irene is squeezing him out of her life. She insists on doing all of the child care herself and doesn't seem to have time for him anymore. She has been thinking a lot about her own childhood. Her parents divorced when she was 2, and she was shuffled between relatives' homes for years. She tells Kurt she doesn't want their son Brendan to feel abandoned by her as she did by her own mother. But Kurt feels betrayed because one of the things he's always loved about Irene is how nurturing and motherly she is toward him. Now all that's being directed at the baby, and he feels cheated. Solvable or perpetual? 9. Oscar just inherited $5,000 from his great-aunt. He wants to use it to buy home exercise equipment. But Mary thinks they should save it for a down payment on a house. Oscar says the inheritance is really not enough to make a dent on a down payment, so why not use it for something they can enjoy right away? But Mary believes that every little bit adds up, and that they have to save as much as they can all the time. Solvable or perpetual? 10. Anita thinks Bert is stingy about tipping waiters, cab drivers, and so on. This upsets her because part of her image of a strong, sexy man is someone who's generous. When she's disappointed with Bert, she gets very contemptuous of him. Meanwhile, Bert believes that Anita is too loose with their money, which makes him nervous. To him, money represents security and a sense of control over his life, so it's hard to give up any of it. Solvable or perpetual? Answers. 1. Solvable. Cliff has stopped taking out the garbage only recently and for a specific reason that's not related in any deep way to his relationship with Lynn. Namely, he's under a lot of stress at work. This problem could be solved in any number of ways, from putting a sign on the refrigerator door to remind him, to reshuffling their domestic chores so that Lynn gets garbage detail for a while until Cliff's work deadline passes. 2. Perpetual. This problem suggests a core difference between Elise and Joel in their personalities and what they need from each other to feel close and connected. This difference is unlikely to change. They'll need to adjust to it. 3. Perpetual. Ingrid and Gary are engaged in a metacommunication war. This means that they aren't having difficulty communicating about a certain issue. They're having difficulty communicating about how to communicate. This is not related to a specific situation, but is present whenever they have a disagreement. 4. Solvable. Helena and Jonathan can resolve this issue in a number of ways. Perhaps they could switch off weekly between dancing class and Helena's girls' night out. Or maybe her friends would be willing to switch the night. Or Jonathan could find another dancing class on another night or on the weekend. Or one of them could simply agree not to push it. 5. Solvable. Roger just needs to spend more time with his son so he can get up to speed on his care. And Penny needs to back off and let Roger approach baby care his way. Because this issue isn't related to deep-seated needs either of them has, it can be readily solved through compromise. 6. Perpetual. This problem probably started out as a situational one about house cleaning and organization. Perhaps Jim and Thea have different tolerance levels for clutter, dirt, and how planned out one's life should be. But because they haven't found a compromise position about running their house, they have continued to argue about these differences. Thea has come to feel her husband doesn't value or respect her role, while he feels that she's not holding up her end of the marriage by keeping the household well organized. The argument has become about their mutual resentment rather than about housekeeping. 7. Perpetual. Brian and Elisa have different emotional styles. He tends to be volatile, meaning that he's very passionate and out there with his emotions. Elisa prefers to discuss issues quietly and rationally. When Brian starts yelling at her, she feels overwhelmed and quickly becomes flooded. Since emotional style is part of one's personality, neither of them is likely to change. But by becoming aware of and respecting each other's emotional style, they can find an approach to conflict resolution they are both comfortable with. 8. Perpetual. At the core, Irene and Kurt have different emotional needs. The huge change in their marriage that was created by their child's birth has thrown what they need from each other out of sync. 9. Solvable. Oscar and Mary may have different philosophies about savings, but their conflict over money doesn't appear to be symbolic. Instead, it's a straightforward difference of opinion about what to do with Oscar's inheritance. For that reason, they could probably find a straightforward compromise. Perhaps, for example, they could spend half of the amount on equipment and save the rest. 10. Perpetual. Money has very different meanings to Bert and Anita. Since the symbolic significance of money is usually rooted in childhood experiences, it's unlikely that Bert will naturally transform into a big tipper, or that Anita will suddenly learn to love clipping coupons. But if they work together on this perpetual problem, and especially Anita's contempt for her husband about this issue, it will cease to be a major sore spot in their relationship. Assessing Your Marital Conflicts Questionnaire. Now that you have a greater understanding of the differences between solvable and perpetual problems, it's time to categorize your own marital issues in this way. By doing so, you'll know which strategies to use to cope with them. Ahead is a list of 17 common causes of conflict in a marriage. For each, write down whether it is a perpetual problem in your marriage, a solvable problem for you, or not a problem right now. If it is either a solvable or a perpetual problem, jot down all of the specific sub-areas that you think are currently troublesome. 1. We are becoming emotionally distant. Perpetual, solvable, or not a problem right now. Jot down any of these specific items that are problems within this general area. We have difficulty just simply talking to each other. We are staying emotionally in touch with each other less. I feel taken for granted. I feel my spouse doesn't know me right now. My spouse is, or I am, emotionally disengaged. We spend less time together. Comments. 2. There is spillover of non-marital issues, such as job tension, into our marriage. Perpetual, solvable, or not a problem right now. Jot down any of these specific items that are problems within this general area. We don't always help each other reduce daily stresses. We don't talk about these stresses together. We don't talk together about stress in a helpful manner. My spouse doesn't listen with understanding about my stresses and worries. My spouse takes job or other stresses out on me. My spouse takes job or other stresses out on the children or others. Comments? 3. Our marriage is becoming non-romantic and passionless. The fire is dying. Perpetual, solvable, or not a problem right now. Jot down any of these specific items that are problems within this general area. My spouse has stopped being verbally affectionate. My spouse expresses love or admiration less frequently. We rarely touch each other. My spouse, or I, have stopped feeling very romantic. We rarely cuddle. We have few tender or passionate moments. Comments? 4. We are having problems in our sex life. Perpetual, solvable, or not a problem right now. Jot down any of these specific items that are problems within this general area. Sex is less frequent. I or my spouse get less satisfaction from sex. We have problems talking about sexual problems. Each of us wants different things sexually. Desire is less than it once was. Our lovemaking feels less loving. Comments? 5. Our marriage is not dealing well with an important change, such as the birth of a child, a job loss, move, illness, or death of a loved one. Perpetual, solvable, or not a problem right now. Jot down any of these specific items that are problems within this general area. We have very different views on how to handle things. This event has led my partner to be very distant. This event has made us both irritable. This event has led to a lot of fighting. I'm worried about how well this will all turn out. We are now taking very different positions. Comments? 6. Our marriage is not handling well a major issue about children. This category includes whether to have a child. Perpetual, solvable, or not a problem right now. Jot down any of these specific items that are problems within this general area. We have very different goals for our children. We differ on what to discipline children for. We differ on how to discipline our children. We have issues on how to be close to our kids. We are not talking about these problems well. There is much tension and anger about these differences. Comments. 7. Our marriage is not handling well a major issue or event concerning in-laws or another relative or relatives. Perpetual, solvable, or not a problem right now. Jot down any of these specific items that are problems within this general area. I feel unaccepted by my partner's family. I sometimes wonder which family my spouse is in. I feel unaccepted by my own family. There is tension between us about what might happen. This issue has generated a lot of irritability. I worry about how this will turn out. Comments? 8. One of us is flirtatious outside the marriage, or may have had a recent affair, and/or there is jealousy. Perpetual, solvable, or not a problem right now. Jot down any of these specific items that are problems within this general area. This area is the source of a lot of hurt. This is an area that creates insecurity. I can't deal with the lies. It is hard to reestablish trust. There is a feeling of betrayal. It's hard to know how to heal over this. Comments? 9. Unpleasant fights have occurred between us. Perpetual, solvable, or not a problem right now. Jot down any of these specific items that are problems within this general area. There are more fights now. Fights seem to come out of nowhere. Anger and irritability have crept into our marriage. We get into muddles where we are hurting each other. I don't feel very respected lately. I feel criticized. Comments? 10. We have differences in our basic goals and values or desired lifestyle. Perpetual, solvable, or not a problem right now. Jot down any of these specific items that are problems within this general area. Differences have arisen in life goals. Differences have arisen about important beliefs. Differences have arisen on leisure time interests. We seem to want different things out of life. We are growing in different directions. I don't much like who I am with my partner. Comments? 11. Very disturbing events, for example, violence, drugs, and affair, have occurred within our marriage. Perpetual, solvable, or not a problem right now. Jot down any of these specific items that are problems within this general area. There has been physical violence between us. There is a problem with alcohol or drugs. This is turning into a marriage I hadn't bargained for. Our marriage contract is changing. I find some of what my partner wants upsetting or repulsive. I am now feeling somewhat disappointed by this marriage. Comments. 12. We are not working well as a team. Perpetual, solvable, or not a problem right now. Jot down any of these specific items that are problems within this general area. We used to share more of the family's workload. We seem to be pulling in opposite directions. My spouse does not fairly share in housework or child care. My spouse is not carrying his or her weight financially. I feel alone managing this family. My spouse is not being very considerate. Comments? 13. We are having trouble sharing power and influence. Perpetual, solvable, or not a problem right now. Jot down any of these specific items that are problems within this general area. I don't feel influential in decisions we make. My spouse has become more domineering. I have become more demanding. My spouse has become passive. My spouse is spacey, not a strong force in our marriage. I am starting to care a lot more about who is running things. Comments? 14. We are having trouble handling financial issues well. Perpetual, solvable, or not a problem right now. Jot down any of these specific items that are problems within this general area. One of us doesn't bring in enough money. We have differences about how to spend money. We are stressed about finances. My spouse is financially more interested in self than in us. We are not united in managing our finances. There is not enough financial planning. Comments? 15. We are not having much fun together these days. Perpetual, solvable, or not a problem right now. Jot down any of these specific items that are problems within this general area. We don't seem to have much time for fun. We try, but don't seem to enjoy our times together very much. We are too stressed for fun. Work takes up all our time these days. Our interests are so different, there are no fun things we like to do together. We plan fun things to do, but they never happen. Comments? 16. We are not feeling close about spiritual issues these days. Perpetual, solvable, or not a problem right now. Jot down any of these specific items that are problems within this general area. We do not share the same beliefs. We do not agree about religious ideas and values. We differ about the specific church, mosque, or synagogue. We do not communicate well about spiritual issues. We have issues about spiritual growth and change. We have spiritual issues involving family or children. Comments? 17. We are having conflict about being a part of and building community together. Perpetual, solvable, or not a problem right now. Jot down any of these specific items that are problems within this general area. We feel differently about being involved with friends and other people or groups. We don't care to the same degree about the institutions that build community. We have different opinions about putting time into the institutions of community, political party, school, hospital, church, mosque, synagogue, agencies, and the like. We disagree about doing projects or working for charity. We disagree about doing other good deeds for others. We have different views about whether to take a leadership role in the service of our community. Scoring. For each of the 17 general areas that cause you problems, count up the number of specific bones of contention that you've written down. If you've chosen more than two, then this is an area of significant conflict in your marriage. For solvable problems, you'll find advice in Chapter 8. But if some of your problems are perpetual, follow the advice in Chapter 10 as well. No doubt you'll find that your marriage, like most, is coping with both types of problems. The key to all conflict resolution. In the chapters ahead, you will find specific techniques that will help you to manage your marital troubles, whether perpetual or solvable. But first, some overall advice. The basis for coping effectively with either kind of problem is the same. Communicating basic acceptance of your partner's personality. Human nature dictates that it is virtually impossible to accept advice from someone unless you feel that that person understands you. So the bottom line rule is that before you ask your partner to change the way he or she drives, eats, or makes love, you must first make your partner feel that you are understanding. If either or both of you feels judged, misunderstood, or rejected by the other, you will not be able to manage the problems in your marriage. This holds for big problems and small ones. You may discover that your partner is more conciliatory during arguments than you realized, once you know what to listen for. It's probably easiest to acknowledge this truth if you think about it from your own perspective. Say you want your spouse's advice on handling a disagreement you're having with your boss. If your spouse immediately begins criticizing you and insisting that your boss is right, you're wrong, and what's the matter with you for picking a fight with your boss anyway, you'd probably regret having brought it up. Most likely you'd get defensive, angry, offended, hurt, or any combination of these. And yet your spouse might honestly say, "But I was only trying to help." There's a big difference between, you are such a lousy driver, would you please slow down before you kill us? And, I know how much you enjoy driving fast, but it makes me really nervous when you go over the speed limit. Could you please slow down? Maybe that second approach takes a bit longer, but that extra time is worth it, since it is the only approach that works. It's just a fact that people can change only if they feel that they are basically liked and accepted as they are. When people feel criticized, disliked, and unappreciated, they are unable to change. Instead, they feel under siege and dig in to protect themselves. Adults could learn something in this regard from research into child development. We now know that the key to instilling in children a positive self-image and effective social skills is to communicate to them that we understand their feelings. Children grow and change optimally when we acknowledge their emotions. That doggy scared you. You're crying because you're sad right now. You sound very angry. Let's talk about it, rather than belittle or punish them for their feelings. It's silly to be afraid of such a little dog. Big boys don't cry. No angry bears allowed in this house. Go to your room till you calm down. When you let a child know that his or her feelings are okay to have, you are also communicating that the child himself or herself is acceptable, even when sad or crabby or scared. This helps the child to feel good about himself or herself, which makes positive growth and change possible. The same is true for adults. In order to improve a marriage, we need to feel accepted by our spouse. Another important lesson I have learned is that in all arguments, both solvable and perpetual, no one is ever right. There is no absolute reality in marital conflict, only two subjective realities. The following exercise will, I hope, help you come to see that by walking you through an analysis of the last argument you had, of either type. Exercise, your last argument. Answer the following questions in regard to the last argument you had. You'll see that this exercise is very similar to the one in Chapter 5, What to Do When Your Spouse Doesn't Turn Toward You. That's because both of these situations are founded in what I call subjective reality. In other words, when you and your spouse are not in sync, either in little ways, not turning toward each other, or in bigger ways, actually fighting, your perspectives on what happened and why are likely to be very different. Whether your conflict is perpetual or solvable, you'll find coping with it far easier the more you are able to respect each other's point of view, even if it is very different from your own. There is no answer key for the following questions. Use them to spark some mutual soul-searching with your spouse. During this argument, I felt 1. Defensive. A great deal, definitely, a little, not at all. 2. Hurt. A great deal, definitely, a little, not at all. 3. Angry. A great deal, definitely, a little, not at all. 4. Sad. A great deal, definitely, a little, not at all. 5. Misunderstood. A great deal, definitely, a little, not at all. 6. Criticized. A great deal, definitely, a little, not at all. 7. Worried. A great deal, definitely, a little, not at all. 8. Righteously indignant. A great deal, definitely, a little, not at all. 9. Unappreciated. A great deal, definitely, a little, not at all. 10. Unattractive. A great deal, definitely, a little, not at all. 11. Disgusted. A great deal, definitely, a little, not at all. 12. Disapproving. A great deal, definitely, a little, not at all. 13. Like leaving. A great deal, definitely, a little, not at all. 14. Like my opinions didn't matter. A great deal, definitely, a little, not at all. 15. I had no idea what I was feeling. A great deal, definitely, a little, Not at all. 16. Lonely. A great deal? Definitely. A little? Not at all. What triggered these feelings? 1. I felt excluded. A great deal? Definitely. A little? Not at all. 2. I was not important to my spouse. A great deal? Definitely. A little? Not at all. 3. I felt cold toward my spouse. A great deal? Definitely. A little? Not at all. 4. I definitely felt rejected. A great deal? Definitely. A little? Not at all. 5. I was criticized. A great deal? Definitely. A little? Not at all. 6. I felt no affection toward my partner. A great deal? Definitely. A little? Not at all. 7. I felt that my partner was not attracted to me. A great deal? Definitely. A little? Not at all. 8. My sense of dignity was being compromised. A great deal? Definitely. A little? Not at all. 9. My partner was being domineering. A great deal? Definitely. A little? Not at all. 10. I could not persuade my partner at all. A great deal? Definitely. A little? Not at all. Now that you know what triggered this episode, it's time to see whether your emotional reaction is rooted in your past. Look over your answers to the Who Am I exercise in Chapter 3. See if you can find connections there between earlier traumas or behavior and the current situation. Use the following list to facilitate this search for links between the past and present. This recent argument was rooted in, jot down all that apply. The way I was treated in my family growing up. A previous relationship. Past injuries, hard times, or traumas I've suffered. My basic fears and insecurities. Things and events I have not yet resolved or put aside. Unrealized hopes I have. Ways other people treated me in the past. Things I have always thought about myself. Old nightmares or catastrophes I have worried about. After you've read each other's answers, you will, I hope, come to see that we are all complicated creatures whose actions and reactions are governed by a wide array of perceptions, thoughts, feelings, and memories. In other words, reality is subjective, which is why your partner's perspective on the argument may be different from yours, without either of you being right or wrong about what really happened. It's natural to make the fundamental error of believing that the fight is all your partner's fault. To break the pattern, you both need to admit some role, however slight at first, in creating the conflict. In order to do that, read the following list and jot down all that apply to you and that may have contributed to the argument. Do not try to do this until you have calmed down physiologically. Let go of thoughts that maintain distress, thoughts of feeling misunderstood, righteous indignation, or innocent victimhood. 1. I have been very stressed and irritable lately. Yes, definitely. Maybe a little. 2. I have not expressed much appreciation toward my spouse lately. Yes, definitely. Maybe a little. 3. I have been overly sensitive lately. Yes, definitely. Maybe a little. 4. I have been overly critical lately. Yes, definitely. Maybe a little. 5. I have not shared very much of my inner world. Yes, definitely. Maybe a little. 6. I have been depressed lately. Yes, definitely. Maybe a little. 7. I would say that I have a chip on my shoulder lately. Yes, definitely. Maybe a little. 8. I have not been very affectionate. Yes, definitely. Maybe a little. 9. I have not been a very good listener lately. Yes, definitely. Maybe a little. 10. I have been feeling like a martyr. Yes, definitely. Maybe a little. Overall, my contribution to this mess was, how can I make this better in the future? What one thing could my partner do next time to avoid this argument? If, after working through this exercise, you or your spouse still find it hard to accept each other's perspective, it may help you to work together more on the exercises in Chapter 4, Strengthening Your Fondness and Admiration System. I have found that couples who have remained happily married for many years are able to enjoy each other, foibles and all, because of the strength of their fondness and admiration. Many of the older couples I studied with colleagues Bob Levinson and Laura Karstensen in the San Francisco Bay Area were masters at this. They had been married for a very long time, some for more than 40 years. Through the course of their marriages, they had learned to view their partner's shortcomings and oddities as amusing parts of the whole package of their spouse's character and personality. One wife, for example, accepted with a chuckle that her husband would never stop being a Dagwood, always running late and frantic. She found ways around it. Whenever they had to get to the airport, she'd tell him their plane left 30 minutes sooner than the actual takeoff time. He knew she was deceiving him, and they laughed about it. Then there was the husband who looked upon his wife's weekly shopping sprees with as much amusement as dread, even though her shopping style made bill paying very confusing. She almost always returned about half of her purchases. Somehow, couples such as these have learned to mellow about their partner's faults. So although they communicate to each other every emotion in the spectrum, including anger, irritability, disappointment, and hurt, they also communicate their fundamental fondness and respect. Whatever issue they are discussing, they give each other the message that they love and accept each other, warts and all. When couples are not able to do this, sometimes the problem is that they are unable to forgive each other for past differences. It's all too easy to hold a grudge. For a marriage to go forward happily, you need to pardon each other and give up on past resentments. This can be hard to do, but it is well worth it. When you forgive your spouse, you both benefit. Bitterness is a heavy burden. As Shakespeare wrote in The Merchant of Venice, mercy is twice blessed. It blesses him that gives and him that takes. 8. Principle 5. Solve your solvable problems. It stands to reason that when a husband and wife respect each other and are open to each other's point of view, they have a good basis for resolving any differences that arise. And yet, too often, couples lose their way when trying to persuade each other or settle disagreements. A conversation that could have been productive instead ends up in a screaming match or angry silence. If this sounds like you, and you're certain the problem you want to tackle is indeed solvable, refer to Chapter 7, then the key to resolving this difficulty is to learn a new approach to settling conflict. The advice offered here will also be somewhat helpful in coping with gridlock problems, but it won't be enough. To break the stranglehold a perpetual problem has on your marriage, be sure to hear about Principle 6, Overcome Gridlock, in Chapter 10. The popular approach to conflict resolution, advocated by many marital therapists, is to attempt to put yourself in your partner's shoes while listening intently to what he or she says, and then to communicate empathetically that you see the dilemma from his or her perspective. It's not a bad method if you can do it. But as I've said, many couples can't, including many very happily married couples. Plenty of the people we studied who had enviable, loving relationships did not follow the experts' rules of communication when they argued, but they were still able to resolve their conflicts. By studying intently what these couples did do, I have come up with a new model for resolving conflict in a loving relationship. My fifth principle entails the following steps. 1. Soften your startup. 2. Learn to make and receive repair attempts. 3. Soothe yourself and each other. 4. Compromise. 5. Be tolerant of each other's faults. These steps take very little training because we all pretty much have these skills already. We just get out of the habit of using them in our most intimate relationships. To a certain degree, my fifth principle comes down to having good manners. It means treating your spouse with the same respect you offer to company. If a guest leaves the umbrella, we say, "Here, you forgot your umbrella." We would never think of saying, "What's wrong with you? You are constantly forgetting things. Be a little more thoughtful, for God's sake. What am I, your slave, to go picking up after you?" We are sensitive to the guest's feelings, even if things don't go so well. When a guest spills wine, we say, "No problem. Would you like another glass?" Not, "You just ruined my best tablecloth. I can't depend on you to do anything right, can I?" I will never